Sheen, a right-handed pitcher. Jackson Ferris, a left-handed pitcher. That's the Dodgers package.
Any of those other three guys in the top 100?
No.
Okay, so two top 20 guys and then some depth guys. Okay.
Here's the Tigers package. Max Clark, number 8 prospect in baseball. He was in the Skeens draft, high school player, outfielder. Shortstop Kevin McGonigal, number 11 prospect in baseball. Jackson Job, who I think just had surgery, who was a big-time young arm. Colt Keith, who is an everyday player for the Tigers. And right-handed pitcher Sawyer Gibson Long. You know what the issue with these all of these packages are? They've got names that no one's ever heard of. If you're going to trade the best pitching phenom of all time, you can't get back 4 or 5 guys that no one's ever heard of at this point. Now, maybe we get 2 or 3 years down the road, but if we're going to, if ESPN and other places are going to, you know, entertain this, you know, crazy idea that the Pirates would trade Skeens, which they won't for a myriad of reasons. But let's say they were compelled to do it. I mean, there's a lot of prospects and a lot of good young players, but they're all potential good young players. There's no guys, you'd have to get back guys that were already good. Right? I mean, if you're going to trade them now, you'd have to be able to get guys back that are in the major leagues, are young and playing well at this very second, right?
But how many teams are deep enough to have such overall depth that they would give you a good young player from their team and just be willing to backfill with somebody immediately from their minors?
My guess is no one.
That's kind of a problem.
Yeah.
Nobody wants the guy who's being blocked by the guy. They want the guy doing the blocking in an organization.
Colt Keith is the Tigers' DH. He has 7 homers, 27 ribbies. He's hitting .264.
Each one of these deals seems to have, at best, 2 top 50 prospects. That's exactly what they have, technically.
Yep.
And then, like, Jackson Job is, yeah, he was a very vaunted arm not that long ago. But then it's depth pieces. I don't know, because what you're really trading is the best pitcher in baseball, bar none, I think, including Scooble, barely, for 2 big-time prospects and maybe like one other player that already is somewhat established, but is a middling player, not the centerpiece of the deal.
And Job is out with arm surgery. He last pitched in May. He's on the 60-day IL.
So he's a next-year guy.
Yeah.
The only one I would even like take a second look at, just because it's an outfielder and a shortstop, is the Detroit offer. And Detroit would, I think, with Scooble and Skeens, instantly become the favorite to win the World Series, would they not?
I mean, is anybody... Oh, my God. That would just be...
Scooble and Skeens would be Schilling and Randy Johnson 2.0.
Yeah,
and the
maybe
way
better.
That the way that the playoffs are set up now, they could roll those two out in the wild card. You could almost hold one of them off in a 3-game wild card series unless you had to use them. But you could just try to truck everybody with 2 unbelievable starters in every series.
Are you guys aware of the... like Brian Reynolds, who almost never, ever, ever says or does anything the least bit controversial? He's like the most milquetoast baseball player of all time.
Correct.
Noah Hyles, great reporting by him, leaked the list of no trade partners, like the teams Brian Reynolds can't get traded to without his permission. Did you see this, Donnie? Did you see the story?
The Yankees, the Dodgers.
I know that the list got leaked. I forget all the teams.
Yankees,
on it.
Dodgers, Mets, Giants, Padres, Blue Jays. All teams that have been, like the Yankees, some of these teams have actually been linked to him. And other teams are big market teams that have just made a lot of trades. I mean, the Padres trades.
Yankees, Dodgers, Mets, Padres, Giants, Blue Jays?
Yeah.
So he basically, with the exception of Chicago, doesn't want to play in the largest markets in North America.
Well, here's the thing about that. I think there's a little nuance here. I think he wants a say in whether or not he wants to go to those places. Like, he thinks that those are the teams that are most likely to trade for him. So before he gets traded there, he wants to be able to say yes or no to that team, is my read on it.
I understand that some people are not wired to play specifically for the Yankees because there's a certain just expectation and like fan pressure.
Yeah.
I don't really think that exists with like the Dodgers, as good as they've been. It's laid back Southern California.
So
The Padres, even more laid back, and it's a military city, too. It's like basically the Oklahoma City of Southern California.
Well, let's get back to what I said about Reynolds and having really no personality and never rocking any boats.
Other than those Ryan Reynolds gin ads that he did, where he plays
which went away quickly. They were here one day and gone the next.
They weren't bad ads, though. They kind of played up pretty funny how he has no personality.
Evan Longoria
okay,
got a hold of this list on Instagram. And he tweeted, or he not tweeted, whatever you call it, posted back, replied, commented, "Buddy never wants to win," with a crying face emoji, laughing emoji, crying laughing emoji.
Okay.
Reynolds comes out of his cocoon to respond. "Chill out, keyboard warrior," said Reynolds.
Did he write like anything in?
No, there was no like LOL or anything. It was just that.
I would probably refrain if I were in Brian's shoes from sincerely calling a guy who was a better baseball player than him a keyboard warrior. We're not, no one's going to sit here and try to pretend to me that Evan Longoria was not a much better baseball player than Brian Reynolds.
I think it's interesting that somebody who was a very good player for a very long time,
16-year career,
looked at this list and inferred, he's content just playing on a bad team. Because I could see, like, fans see this list, and that's the conclusion they come up with. Wow, Brian Reynolds must just want to, like, languish in Pittsburgh and hit his 260 with 20 home runs in perpetuity and just be a slightly above average baseball player till the cows come home. It's one thing when a dude of that stature, I wouldn't say he's a Hall of Famer, but he's not that far off. He's probably one of the 50 best third basemen ever. Says, hey, you really don't want to win. I mean,
yeah, it's weird.
It's, I don't know if it's just, I mean, if you're it's a big accusation to make against somebody.
Do you think, like, Longoria, fans, because he put the laughing emoji in there, was trying to be funny about it and just like joking around, and Reynolds took it dead seriously? Is this a case of like mistaken implication?
Don't you think that like Longoria meant that, but he's trying to
be fun about it?
He's trying to pass it off as like a half kidding thing, but there's actually a half truth to it. Obviously, Reynolds took it that way because he didn't joke around with him back.
There's an implied thing in there, I think, that suggests that like you don't kind of have that dog in you if you don't want to play in some of those higher pressure, higher expectation places.
I think Reynolds deserves more criticism than Cruz. He's making $106 million.
Why do you think he doesn't get any or get the same amount?
Because people don't see the upside with Reynolds, and they see that Cruz has the potential to be great. And
but that's a weird statement, because Reynolds has had seasons that are by definition better than anything Cruz has
done. But here's what I mean by that. Brian Reynolds at his best will never be one of the 5 or 10 best players in baseball. O'Neill Cruz might be that if he figured it out. Reynolds doesn't have that potential in him.
Oh, no, I will say this. Potential, yes. O'Neill Cruz, the way things are going, will be very fortunate to have a season close to as good as Brian Reynolds in 2021.
Yeah, I know.
He'll be fortunate to have something close to that.
So I think you're answering your question as to why people don't get on Reynolds as bad. Because Reynolds has had some pretty productive years, legitimate all-star seasons. And O'Neill Cruz is now in his late 20s, and he still hasn't done that. And he's probably got more talent in his ankle than Brian Reynolds has in his entire
body.
Believe
it or not, I think that's somewhat disrespectful to Reynolds. I can say that O'Neill Cruz has more talent in his ankle than caller Tom to start the show, who never made it out of college baseball. Brian Reynolds has hit 25 home runs in the big leagues.
So you disagree with my take that Reynolds deserves more criticism than Cruz?
No, I completely agree. I just think it's maybe not necessarily for the reasons you're saying. I think, like, Reynolds, there's always this... Cruz, for better or worse, like, no hitter in baseball runs hard down the line anymore every single time. It just does not happen. That's sign of the times. I think Cruz occasionally, he does like looking cool out there. He'll admire a home run, and because Brian Reynolds is lunch-pailing his way into groundouts, like, it somehow absolves him from blame, even though by pay scales and by reputation, he should be their steadiest and best player, and he's been a void for them in every way this year.
The text line says it's all about taxes. He doesn't want to go anywhere where he has to pay taxes. Too bad Delaware doesn't have a baseball team. No income tax. or no sales tax in Delaware.
So Canada, California, New York. Not wrong. I mean, that's actually a very good observation.
So presumably Reynolds would be thrilled to go to the Astros where there's no state tax.
I think this is actually a great call by the texters.
Reynolds to the Rays, no state tax.
The A's would never make a trade, so even though they're in California, you don't have to worry about them.
Yeah.
I guess the one team he left out is the Angels, but they kind of came into the season as a team that wasn't expected to really do anything.
So he would go to the Phillies, I guess?
Yeah, he's already paying Pennsylvania taxes. What's the difference? He's not taking a loss there.
Would he go to Detroit? Presumably. Pure Michigan.
Yeah.
Milwaukee? He'd love to go to Wisconsin. Oh, I feel like St. Louis is tailor-made. Missouri might be Brian Reynolds' state, man.
Why? Is there
Ozark
a good tax
Mountains?
There?
It's just the Ozarks.
The Ozark Mountain Daredevils.
Jackie Blue.
I think they're right.
There were like seven people.
I think they're
all
right.
From different numbers. Not like that's the same guy just texting taxes, taxes.
No,
so
I know.
It is about
like seven
so,
people.
So,
that
so
like,
it's about money and not winning to him.
Seems like it. He won't get ripped for that, though.
He did by Evan Longoria.
He won't get ripped by hardly anyone else for that, though.
Would you rather get ripped by 1,000 fans or one person you really respect? I'd rather get ripped by 1,000 fans.
I mean, that would require somebody to respect me, but I think I would rather get ripped by 1,000 fans.
Like, I think if Reynolds had 1,000 people saying, well, he doesn't want to win, he wouldn't give a rat's ass. He responded because Evan Longoria said it about him.
I think most fans, I don't know, I have this weird feeling that the fans who are pointing out that it's taxes actually agree with Reynolds. They're just trying to point out why this is. They don't rip him for that, that they like that about him.
Music Meet is time for the Donnie Football Debrief a little bit early because Greg Brown had to move things around with his schedule in Kansas City with the Royals. Donnie's big football topic of the day brought to you by Saloni's Italian Bread Company, over 100 years of baking experience. And by the way, you can listen back to the debrief and other parts of the show, the Buckle Auction House, what we said about O'Neill Cruz and the Home Run Derby at 2 o'clock. It's all there, PM Team On Demand, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Hit it, Don.
The debrief, July 8, 2025. A pair of Steelers-related birthdays today. One, the actual franchise itself on this date in 1933. And the other, Jack Lambert, one of the, maybe the most popular player in franchise history. He turns 73. I wanted to more so talk about him because, I don't know, it's the Steelers' birthday. That's great. Where does Lambert rank when it comes to most popular Steelers ever? In their almost 100-year history now.
I think popular he is number one.
Not with you guys. You insist that Ham was better than him.
Yeah, I don't think he's the best.
That's not always the conversation. Popularity, I think he's number one.
I think he's one. I think he's above Joe Green.
Every single person in my father's generation, Jack Lambert's the favorite player. I think they bring up Lambert before they bring up Joe Green.
I mean, do I have to
say
that?
They respect Green more. Right?
But I don't know if they do.
Lambert was like
I don't know if they do. They all wanted to be Lambert.
Lambert may not have been the best player on that defense. Hell, he probably wasn't. He may not have been first, second, or third, but he was the face of the Steel Curtain. Like, he had the face for it. They put him on Sports Illustrated. He didn't have any teeth.
Yeah, you're selling me on it.
Like, you could argue that he's behind Green, Ham, and Blunt all
time. I would argue he's behind all three of those guys in terms of how good of a player he was. He's still a Hall of Famer, even having said that, like a deserving one, but he just happens to have been on a team that was as stacked as anyone's ever been on that side of the ball. I just think there's a lot of factors working in his favor to be the most popular.
Okay, the rebuttal here has to be Polamalu, right? I mean,
I think he's more popular than Troy.
Who doesn't like Troy and who's ever even like
who
disparaged
like
him? And well, at least with Lambert, there's room for some like, you know, splitting hairs criticism with him that you guys like to do from time to time.
I wouldn't even say it's criticism. It's just saying I thought Ham was better. There was
splitting hair critiques. There's a splitting hair critique there.
Yeah, but it's not like we're ever knocking the guy's play.
Yeah, well, you kind of are when you say he's not as good as someone. That's the definition of knocking someone's play.
I feel it's more of a reminder of like, Jack Ham was pretty good too. And it's like, it feels like
there was
that's
a little
not
more flash and style with Lambert, although I'm sure he would abhor somebody calling him a flashy player, but he was, in a sense. He was going to spike a guy. He was going to get in somebody's face. He was going to pull some tough guy stuff with somebody at any given moment, and people like that. I mean, fine, I will spell it out and say it. He was a white linebacker who was a tough SOB who was also great. That is a huge reason why he is immensely popular. My God.
Well, Jack Ham was all those things,
but he
too.
Also was not a toothless maniac who was ready to fist fight anybody on the other team at any time.
So the lack of teeth?
You don't think that's why he
was the face of
the whole
steel
point
curtain.
Of why Jack Ham doesn't get talked about by enough people as being better is because he was just Mr. Fundamentally
so
Sound.
So if Lambert went to a dentist and had nice teeth, people would universally think Ham's better. The lack of teeth is what in the mind. Okay.
It's that Ham was like a
clean cut?
He was a quieter player on the field who was just Mr. Fundamentally Sound. You can find any number of highlights of Lambert committing possible aggravated assault, which was legal back then on a football field, and that is a major reason why people love him. Joe Green was like the venerable guy who, yes, would also commit aggravated assault, but he just did not have the larger-than-life personality that Lambert put out there on the field.
Everything we're saying about Lambert in terms of popularity is somewhat passed down because we didn't live during the time in which he played, so we're measuring his popularity decades after the fact, and yes, he's still, to this day, you go to Steelers games and you see not just old farts, but you see younger people in Jack Lambert jerseys. Donnie's wearing a Jack Lambert t-shirt today with a cartoon Lambert on it to celebrate Jack Lambert's Steelers career. But I have to admit, it is difficult for me to fathom someone being more popular than Troy. It just is.
Well, you didn't live in the era where Joe Green and those guys were playing.
And either did you. So that's why I don't understand why you can't at least see it my way, which is I firsthand have experienced the popularity of one guy, and the other person you're talking about, you're having to do it through like what your dad or uncle said about the guy.
I mean, knowing you know my dad would have probably said Green was the best and then Ham the cerebral assassin was number two. You guys know how my dad is. He would have said Ham was always in position.
Like, I think among modern Steelers, Troy, Bettis, Hines, like all of those guys give him a run for it. I'm not saying like, I'm not disagreeing with you guys.
I think if you
asked
anybody
that saw, I just don't think it's an open shut case.
If you asked the fairly large body of Steelers fans that are still alive who saw Steelers football in the 70s, you said you can have one Steelers jersey from your whole collection and the rest get burned. Lambert is going to be the one that most of them keep, even if they saw and loved Troy. I mean, Troy's whole thing was, too, like, Lambert had a personality to him.
So does Troy.
No, he didn't. He would make the sign of the cross like he was praying for his opponents after maiming them.
But I disagree with you on that. I think, like, personality does not mean that you have to be, like, an outgoing person.
I do think they were similar players because I think I know where you're going to go with this. Like, their play did so much of their talking. And, like, even though they were, like, trash talkers maybe on the field, they weren't going to be, like, the first guy jumping to a podium.
But I would also say to Chris, like, the, like, monk-like lifestyle of Troy absolutely adds to his popularity and reverence
for him. I don't
think
it adds to it to the degree that Lambert's I will literally fight anybody at any time does. That's always going to be a more popular mentality to have, especially in a sport like football. Troy being like this Zen Buddhist type of like, I'm praying for you guy, it's almost like funny. Like, can you believe this guy?
It's very hard to do this because social media is still like skews younger. So it would be easier to do this if we just like took calls on it. I honestly think if we were just bored and did a straw poll, who was your favorite Steeler from the 70s? And we were keeping track. I'm not sure Lambert blows out Joe Green. I don't think he does. I think it's very, very close between those two guys. Extremely close. Like, Green might actually beat him.
I don't think there's a question when people argue who was better, people would tell you Green.
I didn't say better, I said
but
favorite.
But I think in popularity or favorite, I think it's Lambert, man. Okay. I see more 58s than I do 75s.
You see a lot of 75s, bro. You see a ton of 75s at games. A lot.
I think you see more 58s.
And you still see 43s and you still see 7s, even though Mulsey might disagree with that last one.
Who's more popular, Franco or Ben?
Franco.
And you see more 32s then. You know what you're not going to see a lot of? 84s. Even though he might be better than all of them, just about. Not quite
all
of them.
No, I feel like people are starting to bring their 84s back.
I mean, I would not be caught dead wearing one because he's a horrible guy.
But you wouldn't be caught wearing any jersey because you don't believe in putting another man's name on your back.
Do you actually want to know, though, if I were going to wear one of these jerseys because I respected the kind of person the guy seemed to be, too, it would be Troy, actually. Narrowly over Green. Very narrowly.
Donnie?
Although I did respect Lambert for sending Starkey those sarcastic handwritten letters when Starkey would write about him.
Did you guys also happen to see, I posted a picture I got with Jack Lambert. My dad took me to...
an autograph thing?
Yeah.
Because that's like the only place you can find him.
I have to be one of few people my age that have ever met Jack Lambert and got a picture with him.
I'm going to your Twitter because I haven't seen this today.
I'm like 5 years old. My ears look like I'm ready for liftoff because they're like poking out of my hat.
Oh my God, I don't even recognize you in this picture.
I was five.
Lambert looks like he just saw somebody behind the camera who's maybe like going to run up on
but
him
I don't
he's
even
getting ready to brawl.
But I don't even see the makings of a Donnie football there.
Are you saying you looked close at five like you do now? Like you see the obvious, you would know it's Pony?
I think so.
I mean, Donnie, look at me real quick.
Do you get what I'm saying?
That's because Donnie's beard is ubiquitous now, and I think it's tough when he has a thick, unruly beard.
Five-year-old beard.
Unruly beard.
It's actually not unruly. You take very good care of it.
That was the debrief.
What's Lambert's face doing in here, though? He ain't smiling. He looks pissed off.
The man didn't smile often.
Lambert's wearing a watch because he was counting down the minutes until that autograph signing was done.
And I'll say this. It'll never happen. If they would ever actually retire his number would come back, that pop, you would have thousands of grown men in the stadium with tears in their eyes.
Yeah, you're right about that. Fan Hotline is presented by Sullivan Super Service, Pittsburgh's trusted plumbing and HVAC provider for over 50 years. Time for our weekly chat with Pirates play-by-play man Greg Brown. He is in Kansas City where the Pirates are trying to get off the schneid, score some runs and win tonight and put the... offensive malaise of this road trip behind them after that historic sweep at the hands of the Mariners over the weekend. The good news for the Pirates is they'll have even more representation at the All-Star game next week. O'Neill Cruz becomes the first Pirate since Josh Bell to participate in the Slugfest. Greg, Adam Crowley, who you might or might not know, our morning show host here, said moments after this announcement was made that Cruz didn't deserve to be in the home run derby, that he hadn't earned it because he's 39th in the league in home runs this year. What's your reaction to that?
Well, I don't know who's deserving. It's an exhibition. They're trying to show the guys that have the most power and show off at Truist Park. To set the StatCast records at this thing. And, O'Neill Cruz, I wouldn't be surprised if he wins the darn thing.
That's what Paul Skene said today. He said that.
Did he? Yeah. I didn't see it. Well, I'd ask, not to be snarky, I'd ask Adam if he's actually sat and watched a batting practice with O'Neill Cruz. That's all you have to do. And you'd say, this guy, I'd be surprised if he wouldn't have been asked to participate. It makes all the sense in the world to have him involved in this exhibition and put on a show and spotlight, and he'll put on a show, and my money is on him to win this thing.
Well, the funny thing about it is, Greg, I think if he were to win it and put on that show you're talking about, for at least some people who have chimed in with us today, that would just serve as more frustration, fuel for frustration with the guy that he can't seem to put it all together on a game-in, game-out basis, month-in, month-out basis as a big leaguer, that there are still, and even I say this as a guy that obviously wants to see him succeed, there are still those lapses that just are too regular, I think, for people's liking.
Well, yeah, I mean, I get that, but you know, for me, I separate the two. I mean, he's got just unbelievable potential, and then again, I think this serves baseball well and him personally well and the Pirates, because there'll be a lot of eyes on the Derby. There always is. And as I said, he'll put on a show. Now, that to me, it's a separate issue. It is frustrating. I know he's frustrated. He gets angry at himself that he hasn't put it all together. And I'm going to ask Donnie on the pregame today. I've got the pregame radio show. One of the things I want to ask him about is, you know, there are managers who kind of are leery about their players participating in it. I saw the Ellie De La Cruz. I think it's the third year in a row that he turned it down.
Josh Bell, when he did it, went into a slump after the All-Star game.
Yeah. Big time.
So that's going to be one of my questions for him, what he thinks about that. Now, in a weird way, could this, I don't know, but could this actually help him if he goes out, maybe shows some the confidence that is kind of lacking right now, being caught in between? Who knows? I mean, it's not like he's going into this thing tearing up the league and leading the league in home runs. He's in a horrible slump. So maybe the exact opposite occurs with him. He goes into it slumping and comes out of it red hot. That's my hope.
Greg, what is your theory as someone that's watched every one of his games, who's around the team so much? What is your theory on why O'Neill Cruz, with as much potential, you use that word too, to be as good as anybody in baseball, what is your theory on why he hasn't put it all together?
You know, Andrew, to me, it's what makes this game so incredible, so great. This game is so unpredictable. It is so hard to succeed at it every single day, no matter what the potential is. And I've been around a long time. I've heard all about potential and players on the Pirates and other teams around the baseball over the long history of the game who've come to the big leagues with much fanfare. I'll never forget Chad Hermanson.
I knew you were going to say
many,
that.
Many years
I
ago.
I heard he could walk on water, Greg.
Well, that's what, you know, and Woody Heike was his manager, and Woody was not one who was hyperbolic in any way. Woody was very level-headed, low-key, long-time Pirate minor league manager. And when he said that, it was his quote. It really raised eyebrows throughout the organization. And, you know, it makes you perk up because you hear all kinds of stuff throughout, you know, all people have agendas throughout every organization. And depending on your department, whether you're a scout or you're head of minor leagues, you want to push this guy or that guy. But you'd never hear that from Woody. And then when Woody said that, you go, whoa, you know, the numbers were there for Chad Hermanson. Well, then he got to the big leagues. And I will never forget walking for the first day, walking into the clubhouse and seeing, I don't know who it was, in his ear. And then he goes out for batting practice. Someone else is in his ear. And then he walks into the dugout, and another coach or someone is in his ear telling him stuff. I thought, man, I hope he can, you know, decipher all this and not let it get creep in and ruin what he is. Well, then he got here, got to the Pirates, and the Pirates, for whatever reason, did not play him every day. I did a research on it back then before computers and my scorebook and found that he had not started more than, I think, six consecutive games at any stretch. So he would struggle and he'd sit. And then a couple days later, he'd start again, play a couple games, and they'd sit him. And I always felt like if they had just let him go out there and let him play, sink or swim, give him a month, and see what happens, maybe he would have developed into the player that they had hoped and much of baseball thought he would become.
Brownie.
Anyway, long story to say regarding Cruz, this is O'Neill Cruz's second full season in the major leagues. Think about that. He's in the midst of his second full major league season. So as frustrating as it is, you want guys to jump on board and you know, hit 40 homers and steal 40 right away. Some guys, it takes longer, and for him, he's still trying to figure it out.
Brownie, just a quick one here. I think of great Pirates throws from the outfield, outfield assists of my lifetime. I think of Jose Guillen at Coors Field getting Nathy Perez going from second to third, just comical.
Who is the third baseman, Chris?
Joe Randa.
Nope.
Sprague?
Nope.
Now I'm blanking on it, who it would have been.
Well, I won't tell you. You guys can.
All right, I'll have to go.
You may tell you. I will tell you. Keith Osick.
Playing third base that day.
Keith Osick was playing third base.
Wow, I would have never guessed that in a million years.
Honestly, that's an unbelievable trivia question. I could have stumped Pony.
It really is.
O'Neal Cruz throwing out Crawford in that Mariners game to keep it scoreless when Skeens is on the mound. How many better throws have you seen? Because, I mean, I don't blame you. You called it like the run was fait accompli, and then there was just this shocked sound when it actually happened.
Well, I actually talked to, I think Kevin Young was our analyst in the booth for that game on the radio side, and that ranks right up there. I mean, the Guillen throw was the one, I'll never forget that. That was, you know, from the right field wall to third base. I don't know how that happened, but that one, and the reason I said that is because, and I said to Kevin, and he agreed with me afterward, no one expected there to be a play at the plate. Like when the ball was hit, it was hit not hard and hit into left center
field.
Crawford
didn't expect it. That's why I didn't say
it.
Nobody
did.
And in fact, I guess whoever was on deck, I forget who it was for Seattle, it should have been like
get down, get down,
Rodriguez or Cal Raleigh. Somebody apparently thought the same thing and wasn't doing anything. And that's why he went in standing up. So no, I did not expect a play at the plate at all. And I was as surprised as J.P. Crawford that there was a play and that Henry Davis was tagging him out. I still can't believe it.
Greg, we got some candor from Charrington on with you when you were doing the show from Seattle with him. The one thing I keep coming back to, though, is when he said, look, we're not like a relief pitcher and a bench bat away. We're far away. We're not a win or two away. And so I applaud, I guess, the transparency there to some degree. But I also heard that and thought to myself, this is the GM of the team that's in year six saying they're not close. Does he realize he's damning himself? He's indicting himself by saying that. You're not close. You're supposed to be close. This isn't year two of a rebuild,
well,
Greg.
I don't know that he said we're not close. He said it's going to take more than just one or two, but he has actually said that they are close. So, you know, I don't know if that's a mixed message or what, and that's why I keep going back to believing that he is trying, and I still think he will pull something off large because he believes that they are close, but it's going to take more than just one. So, in other words,
you've said that a few times. You've said that a few times on large. You've said that a few times here. Like, this is just you as a fan talking, or maybe you do have some inside knowledge that you're going to share with us.
No inside information.
But when you say big, like, you think they're going to trade, like, a baseball trade, Keller, for a bat? Or you think they're going to trade their prospects for major leaguers? Like, when you say big, what do you mean by that, Greg?
Yeah, I would say that. Well, and I think Chris and I talked about this a few weeks ago. I mean, maybe you were not there. I think you were actually on vacation, Andrew. But I think we discussed the idea of what he had said a couple of shows back, which was, I think I asked him something about, I think I used the word tweak, looking to tweak the roster, and he said, well, whether it might or it will take or should take more than a tweak, something to that effect. And so that's, you know, and again, throughout that whole show and the previous shows and the ones leading up to it and even the one last Sunday, I'm thinking that he is thinking that if they are close and he says it is going to take more than just one move, then that's big. And that means, and if he believes they're close, then that's not something they're going to acquire some guy that's a top AA prospect, a bat. That's going to be a bat that is either at the big league level now, not playing every day, or is being held back at the AAA level and for any other team would start, if it not for position A, B, or C at this big league level. I don't know who that is. I don't dive into these minor league players or prospects. But that tells me if they are close and they've got to add more than just one bat or bats, make one or more moves, then that tells me they've got to make big moves between now and the deadline. At least one big one, if not more. So something's going to happen. I'm tempted
to play back the clip of what he said to see if your inference is still the same, where you think he was saying here that he actually thinks they're close, because I heard the exact opposite.
I'm talking about over the last few weeks,
okay,
in talking to him on the air, off the air. I mean, heck, he said that on more than one occasion publicly.
How can he think they're close? They've got three good hitters. They've got three guys they can hit, and that might even be debatable. Cruz, who's hot and cold. McCutcheon, who when he plays is a good hitter. And Gonzalez is hit, but he's only played in 30 games. Who else hits? No one hits.
No, I think Horowitz is a hitter.
He's got a 680 OPS. I mean, that's not, well, he's not good.
Yeah. No, no. It's you know, he's still, again, he's still just now playing every day after missing the first, what, 2.5 months of
okay,
the year.
Okay, I'll give you that. That's four. I'll give you him.
But,
there's four.
But I'm not trying to interpret why he said what he said.
Okay.
I'm just saying that he said it.
Yes, I got
and
you.
So that's all. If he believes they are close, and you can ask him those questions that
well,
you
he
asked
won't,
me.
He won't come on with us, but that's okay.
Well, next time I'm on the show hosting it, I'll try and ask him that.
Okay.
Yeah. So, and for all those reasons, for what he has said on and off the air, I think that he's going to make a big move or two.
Last one, Skeens and 78 pitches. When that happened Sunday, you didn't seem like you were flabbergasted by it, because I'm guessing you were clued into what the plan was. Are you in favor of, like, let's tamp down innings and let's really make sure that we don't go, you know, we don't let this guy be a bucking Bronco if he's, you know, if he pitches 200 innings this year, that's fine. Like, what's your take on making sure that they're very precautious and careful about things with him?
Well, I think that it's a team effort. I just watching even Paul's body language going back to the start in, heck, might have been Milwaukee. I don't know what town it was. He left the. Yeah, I think it was like three starts back, and he left, I think, after four innings. And I had thought that they were going to be watching it as those, you know, you take a look at the innings, you take a look at the workload, you take a look at the stress of the last few starts. So I thought that it was not going to be a surprise that over his next handful of starts leading up to the All-Star game, they'd be watching very closely. Didn't know, you know, what kind of an innings or pitch limit he might be under. But just watching his body language and each time, and I watch it closely to see when Donnie goes to tell him he's out of the game.
He seems on board
there
with
is
it.
Never,
I agree.
There is never, ever a question. It's like, yeah. In fact, there was one time he was kind of chuckling and smiling. And I said, wow, that's a relaxed look, like not upset at all. So he's obviously on board with what they're doing. So it must be a collaborative discussion, not a surprise that, you know, this is how we're doing it, and I think he's probably on board with it.
I think Burnett would have body slammed Donnie Kelly on Sunday.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Situation. I mean, sure. I mean, that, you know, that's a 13-year veteran, yeah, too, of I course.
Know. All right, Greg. Let's hope they get a win tonight at Kauffman Stadium. Goodbye.
Thanks, guys.